He's been with this ensemble for 10 years. He says he loves the energy, he loves the attitude and their mentality. They always want to do their best no matter what. They are the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra, and their music director is Manfred Honeck. His contract has now been extended to 2022, and he's more excited than ever to talk about their new recording. It's a live release featuring Beethoven's Eroica Symphony and the First Horn Concerto by Richard Strauss. This is New Classical Tracks from American Public Media. I'm Julie Amacher. Enjoy. I'm speaking with Manfred Honeck. He is the music director of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. Thank you for joining me.
I am happy to talk to you.
I would love if you would start off by sharing your story with us. I know that you grew up as a young Austrian boy in a pretty large family with 9 children. How did you eventually make your way to the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra?
Well, it was a long way. Indeed, I was born in a 9-kid family in Austria, and it was actually my father who took the whole family to the capital town of Austria, to Vienna. And the reason was he wanted us to have the best teacher in the world, and what he thought in that time was in Vienna. So we studied there, and I had the fortune to have really fantastic teachers. Some of them were also a member of the Vienna Philharmonic. So the consequence was that I got the job as a viola player in the Vienna Philharmonic in 1983, and I stayed for 8 years. But during that time, I was always conducting, so I was already somehow got fire on to lead an orchestra, and I founded the Wiener Jeunesse Orchestra. I was 2 years assistant of Claudio Abbado in the Gustav Mahler Youth Orchestra. So I had then to leave the orchestra because there were so many offerings for a position. So I went then to Zurich Opera House and then to Oslo Philharmonic, where I was principal guest conductor of the Oslo Philharmonic, the Swedish radio. And then it came to this special invitation of the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra in 2006, where after the rehearsal they were asking me already what kind of plans I have in the future, and it turned out that they wanted me to have as their music director. So I'm now the music director for 20 years now.
I'm curious, you had a chance to serve as the assistant conductor to Claudio Abbado. What was that experience like?
It was actually great. We had also to know that I'm, I was a member of the Vienna Philharmonic as a viola player, I could watch all best conductors in the world. And so it was for me the best conducting school what you can imagine. It was so fantastic to see different types, different mentalities, different personalities. And to learn that in that position, it was for me sensational and actually was the basic for my future profession. And Claudio was definitely an important figure. He opened me a little bit of the world to Gustav Mahler. He was a special hero for Gustav Mahler's interpretation, in my opinion. And also he got a little bit more insight how he worked on the score, what he's thinking about different elements in our music business. So I got a lot to talk to him, which was really wonderful. On the other hand, you also could talk to Lenny Bernstein. I think he was like a father to me, and played also under Riccardo Muti or Lauren Marcel, who was one of the predecessors of mine in the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. So I got a lot of possibilities to get these fantastic conductors to know.
Did you just say that Leonard Bernstein was like a father to you?
Yes, because there was a situation. I got the offer in 1991 to go to Zurich Opera House. And I had already a family, it was 3 kids, and to leave an orchestra like Vienna Philharmonic, that must be substantial reasons. And my reason was the conducting. But I was not very sure, but should I do it or how to do it? And Lenny gave me a lot of time and advices on that. So therefore I call him like a little bit kind of a father, you know. So it was beautiful how he helped me to go this step.
Wow, that's wonderful. It's especially a powerful story in this centennial year of Leonard Bernstein.
Absolutely.
Yeah, wonderful. You have been with the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra since 2008, officially as their music director. And your contract, I believe, has been extended to 2020. Is that correct?
It was extended to 2020, but I just recently have extended it to 22 now.
Okay. So yes. You're planning on sticking around for a while.
A little bit, yes.
Why have you been so dedicated to this orchestra? What do you love about the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra?
I mean, it's still a fantastic orchestra. I love the energy and I love the attitude, their mentality. They want to work and they want to do the best on stage and they give everything in the rehearsals, but also in the concert. It's fantastic how they are open the sound always. You know, this I'm always impressed when I come back and conduct the concerts. We did just last week Brahms' Second Symphony, and even if Brahms' color needs another approach, they are willing to take everything and they can do it. And that's for me as a music director just a pleasure.
Your latest recording is another live recording, and it occurred to me, are all of your recordings live recordings?
Yes, they are all live recordings. We normally do three concerts, and after the last concert, we call it the batch session. Normally, it's half an hour or 45 minutes, where if there is some noises during the pianissimo plays or some distracting things, then we are repeating that again.
Why is it important to have a live recording versus a studio recording for you?
Because I think that the orchestra and me myself, we perform a little bit differently if you have 2,600 people in the hall. This is another atmosphere. And if the tone engineer and the sound engineer can catch this moment, it's a little bit different. Because in a studio sometimes, which is also great, and there are great recordings, but sometimes you feel there is missing an audience because you miss actually the moment of music making, and especially in the way like I see the music, it comes from the moment, and when you feel you play this for the audience and not only for the microphones, this is something different. I was myself the beginning was a little bit skeptical how that could work out, especially from a technical point of view. But it turns out that it's right to do and it's the best thing because the people who now listen to our recordings, they all feel like they are sitting in a hall.
A couple of years ago, I had the chance to talk with your principal horn, William Caballero, about your Beethoven recording, which you had released at that point. And I asked him what sets you apart as a conductor with this ensemble. And what he said is that what sets you apart is your attention to the details. You're very detail-oriented, and that's what gives the orchestra such a sense of precision and vibrancy. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I mean, of course, I think every conductor is interested in details. But in my opinion, it's like a painting. If you every small details and color is important to get in the end the whole picture. And I try to do that as good as I can. And I know sometimes I overdo it, but it is so important for me because I don't want to offer another Beethoven symphony like it. There are thousands on the market here. I want really to get everything out. Something new might be also something which was never heard. And you can do it only if you really get extremely precise and also ask what kind of mechanism or what kind of relationship does these small details have in the context of the whole picture. So instead of going through and play it through and having a nice disc, I always was thinking, let's do something very special with every piece. And I really like it very much because sometimes you're not always successful, but the hope that you get able to a fantastic result is much, much more clear. And then on the other hand, also, I have always my own material for the musicians. So I write the bowings down. I write also the dynamic changes sometimes or some, including some colors. So that in the beginning, when I start the rehearsal, they have already my own music part. So I can immediately start the rehearsal with music making. And I need to do that because I really want to do as perfect as I can.
William Caballero is featured on the Horn Concerto No. 1 by Richard Strauss on this recording. How is it that Strauss was able to stretch the possibilities of the horn with this concerto?
Well, I mean, his father was a horn player, and he knew exactly what the horn was able to do. It's amazing how he wrote then difficult notes, and we know that the father of Richard Strauss, Franz Strauss, tried to play that, and he said, this is impossible to play this piece. So he had a little bit kind of conflict with his father. Those other conflicts, for example, Richard Strauss was a big fan of Richard Wagner, and Franz Strauss, he hated actually Richard Wagner. He made actually in the some rehearsal, we know that from letters, that the life of Richard Wagner a little bit difficult. when he was in Bayreuth, but Richard Strauss knew every nuance and every possibility. So I think that this concerto goes really on the edge of that what was possible in that time, where they have more or less the Naturhorn, the Waldhorn, and later on it starts to change, you know, where they get from the natural hand to the what we call the modern horn, the F horn and the B horn, where they have more possibilities to do that. But the Strauss concert itself was played on the Naturhorn. A natural horn. So this is amazing how they could play that.
It's interesting, too, because the comment that William Caballero makes in the liner notes is how now this horn concerto is played by a lot of younger horn players. It's kind of just something they learn. And so it's harder to really set it apart. And you just made that comment about how that's one of your goals, is to find ways to set these works apart in your performances. And I know he was really pleased that the two of you came to terms with the best way to interpret this work. Can you describe for me what it was, the conclusions that you made?
Everything what happens on the horn is I mean, that's a case of Bills, and he is an outstanding, a fantastic player. He can play pianissimo and then clean fortissimo. Everything you can ask him from this is really wonderful. But when we were sitting together and thinking about how can we interpret this piece, we were thinking, what kind of role did this piece play in when it was composed? And we know that it can be very dangerous to compare this horn concerto with Don Juan or Die Eulenspiegel or Heldenleben, which we love so much. It has a completely different role, but we know that we have to interpret it like a classic symphony or classic concert. He was very young, yet you feel already the influence of Schumann and Schubert, and you feel already here is an enormous capacity and things where you start to get to love then late in the pieces, which we know Die Eulenspiegel was not written very much later. The challenge was actually to interpret it in a classic way, like a second Viennese school piece. At the same time, open also the window for the romantic period, for that what we really think that Richard Strauss stands for. So the romantic accompany, the lively instrumentation, virtuosity, and all these things. So this recording has a special attention to lightness and to virtuosity. At the same time, we tried also to catch the atmosphere of a warm sound, which way I believe it's necessary for this piece, especially in the second movement, which I personally regard as a romance. And I was very happy that Bill also agreed with this view of this piece. And that's also the reason why we put this together with the Beethoven Third Symphony. Sometimes you can call the Eroica also a horn symphony. There are a lot of elements in this symphony which are challenging for the horn section. For example, the trio of the third movement, it was for me here enormously important not just to play the notes, but also go to the characteristics of the old hunting dance. So that's the reason why I put a little bit more stentato in the beginning of the horn phrase. It makes a little bit completely different because Paul Beethoven himself heard also this hunting music all the time. He was very often in the nature. Also listen, for example, in the end of the second movement when the third horn suddenly, and it is very hidden in the score, the three note upbeat, which we now know as the main motif of his Fifth Symphony. But there are a lot of other wonderful things which I always try to get out in Eroica symphony, because I see the Eroica as the real first symphony. Expands enormously, the form is long, it's the longest symphony. He invented rhythmical, completely new things. Hemiolus, they were always here, but in this extent it was never happened before. How he plays with these rhythmical things, it's enormous and harmonic. When you listen to the climax of the development section in the first movement, where he put a sharp dissonance like E and F, especially in the trumpets. It's amazing how shocking this sound. Also, we have to always in mind, our ears have been completely different than 200 years ago, so we are used to dissonance. But here it is in this symphony, I try to sharpen the dissonance a little bit, you know, and also the rhythmical points to bring it so clearly out that you are sometimes a little bit shocked even, and you can imagine that the audience in that time were probably shocked as well. Nowadays we are not so shocked anymore, but on this CD I want to really to bring that out, the feel like you feel it to hear it the first time. There is also on the end of the second movement something what I think is special. In that time when somebody died, it was in Austria tradition that the coffin was brought through a procession to the church. And during that time, from the house of the person who died to the graveyard, the church bell were always ringing. So for me, it was no surprise that Beethoven put this procession into music when the second violin played these eight notes. So he wrote here a shift like a carrot on above the notes. And if you play this short, like we traditionally do, then it's fine. But if you play like a church bell would ringing, then it gets a completely different meaning also. When when you see behind the coffin, the family, the priest as going, and then you hear also the tiny oboe, which symbolizes the children. Or the tears in the thirds. Or where he writes as forzato on the climax, the pain of some lost a human. And then the end, the timpani comes in. I think it is a fantastic procession which Beethoven has experienced. I experienced it myself when my mother died when I was 7 years old. I had exactly the same experience. I did not understand anything. I did not even know what is eroica. But it came always to my mind when I hear this spot. So that means a lot to me personally. And it shows how great Beethoven was connected with the Austrian tradition in that time and put it in the music.
There have been a lot of theories about to whom this symphony was dedicated. And you take a different approach, not looking at this as a political piece, if you will, but more about the concept of a hero and the expression of the human condition. Would you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, that's completely right. And I think we talk too much about this case where Beethoven heard that Napoleon Bonaparte, whom he really admired, that he had a coronation himself to be the emperor. And he was so mad about that he destroyed the first page of the heroic. He dedicated it to him. That was the story. We know now it's not really completely true. Everything he did not destroy it. He raised the name, but then later on he put it back again. So, but we talk too much about that because I think that Beethoven had a human in mind, not a necessarily a political human, because a hero in that time was not necessarily a political hero. It was everything, every human who shared some great values was regarded as a hero, was a moral institution, so to say. But I think if you, from a human point of view, you even could call Beethoven himself as a hero, knowing that he wrote the Heiligenstädter Testament, where he wrote that he will now fight against the lose the hearing, and he was nearly to make suicide, but he stood up and fighted against that. This is also an heroic element, you know, so I think it could dedicate it to himself as well, you know. But I think Beethoven would never do that he would write his name on the first page. But it is a hero, and it can be everybody who meant to be a hero can be described in this symphony.
That's New Classical Tracks from American Public Media, with special thanks to Valerie Kaler for producing this episode. I'm Julie Amacher.